Shalom Aleichem. Today is Yom Rishon, Kaf Dalet Av Tarshin Ayin Beth, 24/05/65, the 12th of August, 2012. We're looking at Masechet Holin, the Kaf Dalet Amud Beth. So to sum up what we saw in the previous shiur, we saw the first two elements of this sugya. The first is on Kof Darad Amud Beth, line 30. Tana Agra Hamor Darabi Abba states, Of Urvina Nechalin Ba'afikorin. Of and Gevina, poultry and dairy, may be eaten Ba'afikorin, not together, but one after the other. And he explains what this means, Ba'afikorin. Rashi explained this means Derech Hefker. He explained, Agra Hamud Rabbi Abba, this refers to Belo Natilat Yadayim Uvelo Kinua HaPeh. And Rashi said explicitly, opposite line 36, a few lines from the bottom in Rashi, Belo Kinua HaPeh, Rashi explains, She'im Achal Zeh Uvikesh Le'achol Zeh En Sarich Litol Yado Ulekaneh. Rashi does not seem to make any distinction between of uGevina in that order, or Gevina and of in the reverse order. In other words, whichever you wish to eat, zeh, and then you wish to eat the other one, zeh, that's possible. And you don't even need to do any of these pu'uloth of Natilat Yadayim or Kinua HaPeh between one and the other. The second element was the ma'aseh of Rav Yitzhak Bered Rav Mesharshia in the home of Rav Asheh, who ate cheese first and then was served meat, basar, not off, basar being basar behema, and he did not wash his hands. And he explained why not, because he could see, being daytime, being light, that his hands were perfectly clean and therefore it was unnecessary to wash his hands. But from this ma'aseh we learn that normally between gevina and basar, one does have to wash one's hands if they are not entirely clean. Whether the same applies to basar first and then gevina is not explicit in this statement. We can't know this for sure. But the fact that at the end of this ma'aseh, on line 36, they said to him, in the home of Rav Asheh, they said to Rav Yitzhak Breder Rav Mesharshia, Amri le, waha tane agra hamod rabi abba, of ugvina ne'achalin ba'afikoren, of ugvina en, this means, from this we understand, dafka of and gvina may be eaten in this fashion, without washing your hands, without kinua hapeh, basar ugvina la, but not basar and gvina. From this it would seem that the order does not matter. Let us continue now with the third element of this sugya, which begins on line 40, two lines, second to last line on the daf. Tanya, it was taught in the Baraita as follows, Beth Shammai Omerim Mekaneah, Uveth Hillel Omerim Madiah. We have a discussion here. Again, between Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel, so it's an ancient tradition, an ancient Beraitha. Again, dealing with issues of milk and meat, obviously. If it wasn't talking about milk and meat, something to do with Basar and Halav, it wouldn't be quoted here in this context. Within the context of this sugya, about eating one after the other, and not together, obviously, because we all know, as we saw in the previous shiur, in the Mishnah above, that even of and gevina may not be eaten together. Kal v'chomer, basar and gevina may not be eaten together. So the whole discussion here is about one after the other. Regarding this matter, Beth Shammai says mechaneah, and Beth Hillel omerim madiah. Now what exactly is being said here? As we will see, the simple meaning is that Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel are discussing kinuah hapeh. In other words, how one is makhshir, so to speak, one's mouth, having eaten one of these substances before one can eat the other. So the Talmud asks, in the last line, Mai mekaneach umai madiach. What exactly are we talking about? What do we mean mekaneach? And what do we mean by madiach? The meaning of the words is pretty straightforward. Mekaneach means to wipe or to clean, and madiach means to wash or rinse with water. So what is being discussed? The Gemara says now in Chof Hei Amud Aleph at the top, Ilema Beth Shammai Omeri Mekaneach, if we understand it to mean that Beth Shammai says you must be Mekaneach, you must do the action known as Mekaneach, and Rashi says at the top, Ilema Beth Shammai Omeri Mekaneach Piu, that you have to wipe out your mouth, clean out your mouth in some fashion. Wala, now here we have the word Ba'e, which appears in some versions and not in others. In Ktav Yad Minchen, for example, the word doesn't appear. I'll read it now. Ba'e, which means sarich, require, need. So ilam abeth shama amari mekaneach wala madiach, that you need to do one, but madiach is not necessary. You need to wipe out your mouth in some fashion, which we'll discuss in a moment, clean it, having eaten the one food stuff before eating the next. But you don't need to do madiach, which is to wash it with water. Rashi says at the top, wala madiach b'mayim sha'kinuach yafe minahadaha, because why would Beth Shammai say such a thing, that mekaneach you need to do, but you don't need to do madiach, to wash it out? Why would they say this? Because they hold sha'kinuach yafe minahadaha, that is, kinuach is more efficient and better, it does the job better than hadaha, than washing it out. Velo huzkira hadaha. There's also the word kan, which either should or should not be in Rashi. We'll read it without that for now. In the Tosafot, who quote Rashi here, they have the word kan, but there's some basis to think maybe the word kan doesn't have to be here, but it doesn't really matter. So Rashi says, madiach is referring to water, b'mayim, sha'kinuach yafemina hadaha, according to Beth Shammai, v'lo huzkira hadaha, and you don't need to do hadaha bichlal. If we hold that that's the case, that Beth Shammai says the pu'ulav mekaneach is sufficient, and Beth Hillel say, and the Gemara continues on line 2, Uvet Hillel omerim madiach v'lo mekaneach, Rashi explains, Rashi here clearly has the word ba'e kinuach. He says, Uvet Hillel omerim madiach v'lo ba'e kinuach, that you need to do madiach, but you don't need to do kinuach. In other words, you should wash out your mouth. You must wash out your mouth with water, but you do not need to clean it out in any other way. And Rashi explains on the third line of Rashi, the lasa gile b'kinuach. It's not sufficient. Kinuach is not good enough. It's a lo maspik. Ela madiach b'mayim. Wuhu ikar. And that's the main thing. That's the important thing. Wa'en sarich kinuach. You don't need to do kinuach. If that's the case, in other words, what is the case we're describing? That the mahloket here, by the way, the Gemara hasn't really explained what the whole situation is about, what this discussion is all about. In other words, what were Beth Shammai discussing? When do you need to do mekaneach? When do you need to do madiach? Correct? In other words, is it in between eating gevina and then basar? It's not between gevina and off, for often gevina, because we learned before that Agra Hamuad Rabbi Abba told us that Of Ugvina Nechalim Ba'afikoren, which means you don't need Natilat Yadayim and you don't need Kinua Hapeh. So that's Vadai not what's being discussed here, correct? What is being discussed here? The only two possibilities are that Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel are discussing either eating Gvina and then Basar, or Basar and then Gvina, or both, correct? It could be that's required in both. That's not yet clear. Of course, those who understand, based on their understanding of this entire sugya, which we haven't completed yet, that you may never, no matter what you do, eat any form of dairy product after having eaten basar behema, shall we say, for argument's sake, then they can't possibly understand this mahloket, this discussion of Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel, as referring to what you may do during a meal, having eaten basar in order to be able to eat gevina, correct? They can't understand it that way, so they have to understand it in the reverse. That is talking about having what do you do, what you must do in order to be able to eat meat, having eaten gevina, correct?
But this tradition of mandatory waiting.
Right, if you understand that no matter what you do, there's no way that you can eat gevina after eating basar, then obviously this discussion of Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel would be a problem if you understood it to be referring to what you do having eaten basar in order to eat gevina. Therefore, obviously you would understand it to be referring to the opposite, that first you ate gevina and then you have to do these things in order to eat basar, but not the other way around, because the other way around can't be. That's one opinion. According to the other opinion, this is exactly what Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel are talking about. They're talking precisely about what you need to do between eating basar first, not of basar, and then you wish to eat gevina, what you need to do in order to make that possible. So what is the discussion? The discussion was Beth Shammai omrim mekaneach and Beth Hillel omrim madiach. And the Gemara said on Daf Kof Ha Amud Aleph, Ilema Beth Shammai omrim mekaneach, Wala madiach or lo ba'e madiach, that you need to do one but not the other. In other words, according to Beth Shammai, mekaneach is preferable, and that is necessary. Mekaneach is necessary, but madiach is not necessary, because they consider cleaning out the mouth by eating some food, as we will see in a moment, is the right way to go about this, not using water to wash out your mouth. Whereas Beth Hillel take the opposite approach. They say madiach wala mekaneach. If that's the case, if that's what was meant, and we have a kushya, says the Talmud Bavli on line 3. Elahad amar Rabbi Zera, the statement that we know that Rabbi Zera made, which was, and this statement should go in inverted commas, en kinuach peh ela befath, the only way to do kinuach peh properly is by eating some bread in between. So let's say you had some meat and you want to eat cheese now, shall we say, according to one opinion that holds this as possible. You need to do kinua hape. What you need to do is to chew some bread, take a bite of bread and eat it. And by doing so, this cleans out your mouth from the remnants of meat, or the flavor, the taste of the meat in your mouth, or possibly the shuman that Rashi mentions, as we will see presently. So if the statement of Rabbi Zera said, En kinuach peh ela befath, keman kebeth shamai, in other words, according to whom is Rabbi Zera speaking? If it seems that Rabbi Zera is explaining what kinuach peh actually means. And if we just explain that Beth Shammai is the one who says you need to do kinuach, and Beth Hillel says you don't need to do kinuach, you need to do hadaha, and therefore bread is not relevant at all because you need water, then Rabbi Zera is holding according to Beth Shammai, and that doesn't make any sense, that Rabbi Zera should be holding according to Beth Shammai. If he wasn't holding according to Beth Shammai, why is he bothering to even explain or discuss the position of Beth Shammai? In other words, that's the assumption of the Talmud Bavli, that if Rabbi Zera is discussing the view which is associated here with the Beth Shammai, that you need to do kinua hapeh dauka and not hadaha, then Rabbi Zera is adopting the position of Beth Shammai. And that's a kushya, because we never hold by Beth Shammai against Beth Hillel, unless it's one of the very, very few unusual cases. Because of this kushya, the Talmud Bavli rejects the possibility that was the nature of the discussion between Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel. In other words, it can't be therefore that Beth Shammai says do kinuach but not hadaha, and Beth Hillel says the opposite, do hadaha but not kinuach. You don't have to bother with the other one. Each one says one is preferable to the other, so you only need to do the one. If that's the case, we have Rabbi Zera's statement, and he seems to be siding with Beth Shammai. That's a problem. So therefore, we have to say something else. So on line 4, the Talmud Bavli says, Ela Beth Shammai omarim mekaneach v'lo ba'e madiach. So rather, we have to explain that Beth Shammai says, mekaneach, you need to do kinuach, but you don't need to do hadaha. Once you've eaten, shall we say, some bread, in between, you had a bite of bread, and you chewed it well, and it's cleaned out your mouth, you don't have to worry about hadaha, and now you can eat the cheese after the meat, or according to the other shita, you can eat your meat after the cheese. That's the view of Beth Shammai, who says you need to do one pu'ula, but not two, which is kinuach and not hadaha. And Beth Hillel say, Beth Hillel omarim, af madiach, you need to do two pu'ulof, both kinuach and hadaha. If that's the case, and we have another situation of Beth Hillel being more machmir than Beth Shammai. If it's one of those situations, one of those rare cases where Beth Shammai is more mekel than Beth Hillel, then this should be listed with that list over there that we heard about before, where Beth Shammai is more mekel than Beth Hillel, and it's not mentioned there. And that's what the Gemara says. Why is this not listed as one of those instances? So that's also a kusha, why we don't want to accept that possibility. So the Talmud Bavli comes along and says on line 8, Ela, we have to explain as follows. Bet Shammai Omerim Mekaneach Wehu Adin Lamadiach. According to this, the simple meaning would seem to be as follows. The Bet Shammai say, you can do Mekaneach, or you can also do Madiach. And Bet Hillel Omerim Madiach Wehu Adin Lamekaneach, you can do one or the other. That's at least one way of reading it. We'll see that Rashi explains something slightly different in a moment. And therefore, Mar Amar Hada, one master, one Chacham, said one thing. Umar Amar Hada, and the other one said something else. Well, Apeliche, they're not disagreeing. They're saying different things. One is saying, you can do Mekaneach or Madiach. The other one says, you can do Madiach or Mekaneach. They're actually agreeing. They're not disagreeing at all. This also raises a question, of course. If that's the case, if they're not disagreeing, then why do we have a Baraita that tells us Beth Shammai says one and Beth Hillel says the other? That's not so clear, correct? In other words, it would be much simpler to say what we originally posited, the original suggestion, which we rejected because of the kushaf of Rabbi Zerah, or the difficulty we have with Rabbi Zerah's statement. In other words, the original position would be much more simple to adopt, namely that Beth Shammai says that Mekaneach is the way to go about this, and Hadacha is unnecessary, and if you did Hadacha, it's not sufficient, and you need to do Kinuach anyhow, so don't waste your time, just do Kinuach. And Beth Hillel hold the opposite, that Hadacha is better than any Kinuach. That is something we could explain and we could understand. The only problem with that was that Rabbi Zerah made a statement regarding Kinuach HaPeh, which implies, so the Talmud Bavli assumes, that he's siding with Beth Shammai. Aniya Katan, Haiti Omer, I would suggest that this is on a Kusha Bichlal. Rabbi Zerah knew this Baraita of Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel, and he explained that when Beth Shammai said Kinuach HaPeh, he was referring to path and not other things. It doesn't mean that he holds like Beth Shammai. He's just explaining the position of Beth Shammai. It's not always the case that if someone discusses and explains the view of Beth Shammai, they hold this as the halakha. The fact is that Talmud Bavli, in many places, discusses the view of Beth Shammai in detail and discusses what was meant, what is the reason for Beth Shammai's position, etc., etc., even though it's clear to everybody that the halakha is not like Beth Shammai. So why can we not say the same thing about Rabbi Zerah? So that's a question which I have. But the Talmud Bavli made this assumption that if Rabbi Zerah made this statement, this would imply that he's holding or leaning towards the view of Beth Shammai, and that doesn't follow the rules, as it were, and therefore we must assume it's something else. But this, of course, led us to two other possibilities, which also ran aground. The second possibility was that Beth Shammai requires only one pu'ula, and Beth Hillel require two pu'ulot, which makes them more mahmir than Beth Shammai, and that also is a difficulty. And now the third possibility that we're being given by the Talmud Bavli, which is the maskana of the Talmud Bavli, that is that each one is saying that you can do either Mekaneach or Madiach. And in that case, it's not very clear what the whole mahlokah, the whole discussion is all about. Rashi, if you look at Rashi now, Rashi says, the fourth line in Rashi, En kinuach peh. En kinuach peh lahakshir la'echol basar ahar gevina. Now here it's interesting that Rashi says lahakshir la'echol basar ahar gevina. You could understand from this, not absolutely clear, but you could understand from this that Rashi holds that you cannot eat basar first and then gevina, but you can do the other way around you may do. In other words, you may first have gevina and then eat basar at the same meal. And the question is, what do you need to do between one and the other? And Rashi says, En kinuach peh lahachshir le'echol basar, to eat meat after having eaten gevina, ahar gevina. Ela, says Rashi, this is a statement of Rabbi Zera, who said, en kinuach pe'ela befath, ela imken kinuho befath, unless you use bread to clean out your mouth. To kinuach hapath, sho'ochel hapath benathayim, hu yahiyafeh. In other words, that does the job properly. That you can rely on, because bread has this, because it has a certain elasticity, and the gluten, etc. It forms a mass in your mouth, which rolls around and cleans out your mouth. So you could understand from this statement in Rashi that Rashi holds you may not eat gevina after basar, but you may eat basar after gevina. Rashi continues to explain the discussion. Neima Beth Shamaihi. In other words, this is, Rashi had a slight different girsa. Instead of Keman Ke Beth Shamai, Rashi's girsa was Neima Beth Shamai. In other words, the implication is that Rabbi Zera is holding according to Beth Shamai, and Rashi explains the Beth Hillel Hadahaba Ebulos Kar Kinuah. In other words, if he's discussing Beth Hillel, then why is he discussing, if he holds like Beth Hillel, why is he discussing Kinuach bichlal? It's what hadaha is what you need to do, and not kinuach at all. Therefore, it would imply that Rabbi Zera holds like Beth Shammai. That was the first possibility, which was rejected. The second possibility was that Beth Hillel holds that you need to do two pu'uloth and not one, both kinuach and hadaha. That Rashi explains this, and he says afmadiach, you need to do both kinuach and afmadiach. Trawai ho ba'enan, you need to do both. Ka'amar Rabbi Zera de kinuach. Ben lamar uven lamar befathu. That makes sense. That is okay. That makes sense, says Rashi, because then we can explain that Rabbi Zera was explaining what kinuach hapeh is, and that statement is true both for Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel, because both Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel require kinuach. The difference is that Beth Hillel requires something further, which is hadaha. So therefore, we haven't got a problem with that. But the trouble with that was a different problem. That it works out in that case that Rabbi. That I'm sorry, the Beth Hillel are being more mahmir than Beth Shammai. That's a separate issue. Therefore, the Gemara asked, why is it not mentioned as one of those cases where Beth Hillel are more mahmir? And that's why Rashi says here, opposite line 5, Walifne, why is it not, or Lifne, why is it not mentioned in Masechet Eduyoth, Shekol Kule Beth Shammai, Wahumre Beth Hillel, Nishenu Sham? All the differences where Beth Hillel are more mahmir than Beth Shammai are mentioned there in Masechet Eduyoth, and it's not mentioned there as one of them, so this is that you're making life difficult for us again. In other words, you're implying that here Beth Hillel are more mahmir, and it's not mentioned over there, so that's a problem. Rashi here explains in the next statement, now we're talking about the third option which the Talmud presents. The third option was, I read it again, the Talmud, line 8, Ela Beth Shammai Omarim Mekaneyah Hu Adin Lemadiyah. The question is, what does Hu Adin mean? I explained the first time round that you could understand it to mean that you can do either Mekaneyah or Madiyah, correct? And Beth Hillel say you can do either Madiyah or Mekaneyah. In other words, you can do either one or the other, you can choose. Both of these pu'uloth are legitimate and acceptable. They both achieve the purpose of cleaning out your mouth, whether you rinse your mouth out with water, whether you eat take a bite of bread. Rashi doesn't explain it that way, probably for the reason that I explained, because, although there are other Mishnayim who do, but Rashi does not explain it this way, because according to that explanation, the reason for the discussion between Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel is not very clear at all. Rashi says, Wuhu Adin, opposite line 8, Rashi says, Wuhu Adin, the Trawai ho Ba'enan, that you need to do both. In other words, both Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel hold that you need to do both. Both Hadaha and Kinuah. But nevertheless, we still left with a difficulty, because we still can ask ourselves the question, what in fact was the discussion of this Braitha all about? The Braitha says Beth Shammai says Mekaneach, Beth Hillel says Madiyah. You're telling me now that they both require both Pu'uloth, both Mekaneach and Madiyah. So what's the, is that machloket? So why have Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel just say Tanya Ha'ochel Gvina Rotzeh Lechol Basar, or the other way around depending on the shita that you're following, Madiyah or Mekaneach, or Mekaneach or Madiyah, or Sarich Ladiyah or Sarich Lekaneach, any such formulation which would explain that you need to do both. There's no machloket here between Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel. So even according to Rashi's interpretation, which is also difficult for another reason, because the term Wuhu Hadin, always means, in every other context, always means this or that. You can do this or that. Wuhu adin laze. You can do this or you can do that. They're both acceptable. Here Rashi is saying huadin doesn't mean that. Rashi here says huadin means you need to do both. So that's already a kushya. But the other kushya is that it doesn't really explain the whole discussion. So this is a point. This is a sticky point that we need to discuss further later to understand, based on what the Talmud Bavli is explaining, how do we understand this baraita Beth Shammai Beth Hillel at the bottom of Daf Kof Dalad Amud Beth. All right, but this, by the way, is the end of element number 3. Well, actually, no. It's not the end of the element. We still have some. This is the essential part of element number 3, but it continues a little bit longer. So, I take that back. It continues to line 17. In fact, so let's read a little bit further down.
Has anybody suggested that Beth Hillel and Beth Shammai are talking about the order in which both of these need to be done?
No one has suggested that. No. Not entirely, because then you would expect that the Beth Shammai would say Mekaneach u'Madiach, and Beth Hillel omri Madiach u'Mekaneach, something like that. Nachon? Here the Gemara continues on line 11 and says Gufa. Gufa means we're going back to a statement we had before to add something more about that. Amara bizera enkinu ahapa ela befath. That's what we saw before. That's the statement of Rabbi Zera, and the Stam Talmud now adds some details. It says, "Wahanemile b'dahite." This is true of bread made of wheat. Again, because of the gluten content, it sticks together. It forms a mass in your mouth. Aval b'dasare, but bread made of barley, which has a much lower gluten content, and therefore it tends to break up into small pieces in your mouth. La, then that's not true. In other words, to clean out your mouth, you need to have regular bread made of wheat, which is normally the case. But if you happen to have some poor man's bread made of barley, which is normally used for other purposes, not for making bread, for this reason, because it doesn't have much gluten, therefore the whole dough doesn't really hold together very well. If that's the case, then it's not good enough for this job. And Rashi explains, opposite line 7, b'desa'are la, mipenesha mitporer b'thoch hapeh, because it breaks up in your mouth into crumbs, into pieces, ve'eno nikshar yahad. It doesn't form a mass kesher lo aso when you chew it. Lefichach eino mekaneach, and therefore it doesn't do a good job of wiping out, cleaning out your mouth. Further, the Talmud states on line 13, udehite name, even bread made of wheat, la amaran ela bekarira. This is only true that it does the job of cleaning out your mouth if it's cold. In other words, if it's not hot, if it's not very fresh and still very hot. Aval b'hamima, if you couldn't wait and you took bread out of the oven and you started eating almost immediately and it's still very hot, mishtar shetare, which means, Rashi says, shetar means na'asa rach. It's very soft when it bak b'hech, and it actually sticks to your gums and your mouth. V'dugmato b'hasokhir, and we find a similar usage, a similar word in Masechet Bava Masiyah, Perek HaSocher, Ishtar Mishtar, Tahboshet Al Ha'ayin. In other words, it's talking there about sticking something onto the eye. In other words, if the bread is too fresh, right out of the oven and still hot, then it also won't do a good job because it's too sticky and It's not going to move around your mouth in the right way because it sticks to your gums, etc. Wahani mile berekicha, and this is true if the bread is fresh, that is to say soft. Aval bakusha la, but if the bread is hard and stale, it also won't do a good job. If it's like toast or a rusk or something, it's very hard and brittle, then also won't do a good job of cleaning out your mouth. Rashi explains, akusha kashe yoter midai. Too hard. This also breaks up into pieces in your mouth because it's hard and brittle, and therefore it won't clean out your mouth properly. So the bread has to be fresh, but not exceedingly fresh, not right out of the oven, and it can't be too stale, because if it becomes hard, like a very well toasted piece of bread, then it's also not going to do the job. Wahilchatha, and now the Gemara says Wahilchatha, and we know, by the way, that any statement in the Gemara which says Wahilchatha is from the period of the Sforaim. It says Bechol Mileh Hawe Kinuah, all things may be used for Kinuah HaPeh, Levar Mikimha Tamre Uyarka, all foodstuffs may be used for Kinuah HaPeh except for these three things, which are Tamre, which are dates, Kimha, which is flour, because it's too, Rashi says rakinhen, they are soft. In other words, it doesn't form a mass in your mouth that cleans out your mouth. Flour, how exactly you eat flour anyhow is difficult to understand, but at any rate, flour doesn't work. Tamre, dates, which are also soft and sticky, do not do the job. Uyarka, and vegetables. Lichora, yarka here means cooked vegetables, by the way, because Rashi says rakinhen, they are soft. Now some vegetables, when they're cooked, when they're cooked are soft, but when they're not cooked, they're hard. For example, we all know that if you eat an apple, or a piece, so eat some apple or a piece of carrot, for example, it cleans out your mouth rather well. Correct. So yarka here, I think, needs to be understood as cooked vegetables, or possibly soft leafy vegetables, maybe like lettuce or something. And because they're soft and not very substantial, they don't do the job properly. The word yirakoth really in Hazal refers to literally green things, that is to say green leafy vegetables. And it could be that's what's being referred to here as well. If it's referring to other kinds of harder vegetables like carrots, then it's referring to such things that are cooked. At any rate, we get the idea. The idea is that if it's the nature of the foodstuff is such that it's not going to clean out your mouth very efficiently, then that's not acceptable. This fact that this statement, which is from the period of the Sforaim, clarifies this point, tells you very clearly that Kinuah HaPeh is considered a requirement. It's something which you must do between eating the one and the other. We still haven't decided, or finally decided the issue, whether it's talking about between eating basar first and then gevina, or dafka gevina and then basar. But whatever the case is, you may eat both these things at the same meal, in either one order or the other, or any order. And when you do so, you need to do kinuah hapeh. Because if kinuah hapeh had been rejected and you only needed to do hadahat hapeh, then the Sforaim wouldn't tell you that you can do kinuah hapeh with any food except for these three. One other thing I would point out is that the fact that the Gemara here mentions tamre, which is dates, is also a clear indication. This is a statement, the halakha, that comes from Bavel, because in Bavel, which has a tremendous number of date palms, dates were a very basic foodstuff, a very common, very basic daily foodstuff. It's not that there are no dates in Eretz Yisrael, but dates were not as basic a commodity, as common a food that people ate basically every day as in Bavel. Dates don't grow in all parts of Eretz Yisrael, whereas dates grow in all parts of Bavel. Everyone, to this day, it's a fact that from Iraq you have very good dates, huge amounts of dates, etc. This is also mentioned in Herodotus, by the way. Herodotus writes, when he describes Bavel, he says that throughout Bavel you have tremendous numbers of date palms, and they use dates for everything, he says. In fact, he even says they make it into bread. Now, how you make dates into bread, I can't tell you, I don't know. That's what he says. But his point is clear, that dates are very, very common and cheap and a basic foodstuff in Bavel. That's the end of the third element. This third element is one of the central elements of the sugya. Because if we understand the mahloket between Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel to be what do you need to do, lachshir et hapeh, in order to clean out your mouth, in order to be able to eat gevina after basar, That's one understanding of the sugya. That tells you that you may eat Gevina after Basar if you did certain things. If you understand this discussion between Beth Shammai and Beth Hillel to be referring to what you need to do in order to eat Basar after Gevina, which is what Rashi said here, on the fourth line in Rashi, Rashi says, Lahakshir le'echol basar ahar gevina. That seems to imply that this is only helpful, this is only useful if you wish to eat basar after gevina in the same meal, but not in the opposite order. Element number four now begins on line 17. Ba'amine Rabbi Asi mi Rabbi Yohanan. It should say Rabbi, even though it doesn't, but it should. Ba'amine Rabbi Asi mi Rabbi Yohanan. Both of them were in Eretz Yisrael. Kama yishha ben basar ligvina. Literally, how long should one wait between eating basar and then gevina? Rashi explains, opposite line 14, Ben basar ligvina, mashma she'achal basar, he ate first basar, v'rose le'chol gevina. This is very important. Why is this very important? Because Rashi is telling you that the order in which things are stated is relevant. According to Rashi, you can't just come along and say, it says basar u'gvina, but it means gvina and basar. Rashi says, if it says ben basar u'gvina, it means shachal basar, where urosele chol gvina. As opposed to what we'll see, at least some of Farshim, some shitoth want to hold about certain other statements. According to Rashi, what you see is what you get. If it says ben basar u'gvina, it means ben basar u'gvina. By the way, this also proves, as we have already understood this, because Rashi says so explicitly, as we saw earlier, but the statement of Agra Hamoda Rabbi Abba on the previous Amud, where he said on line 31, according to Rashi's very same explanation over here on Daf Kof Hamud Aleph, we understand that if it says Of Ugvina, it means exactly that, Of and then Gvina, not just Gvina, and not the other way around, not Gvina and Of Dafka, Of and Gvina, whichever way you like, and it can be Of first. So, and again, the distinction between these two issues, this question or the statement, that is to say, of Agra Hamod Rabbi Abba, about Of and Gevina, and the question here on Daf Kuf Ham with Aleph, line 17, that Rabbi Asi asks Rabbi Yohanan, Kama Yishhe ben Basar le Gevina, they cannot be compared because he's talking about Basar and he's talking about Of, right? They're very different. If you don't recognize, if one doesn't internalize this simple but essential distinction that Of is Of and Basar is Basar and they have different halachic a different halachic status, then one can understand the sugya. But Rashi tells you here, Ben Basar Gvina means first Basar, then Gvina. And the question that Rabbi Asi was asking Rabbi Yohanan is, how long do you have to wait? And you would think, therefore, that here we have a mefurash in the sugya that you do have to wait and that you can't do anything in order to eat Gvina after Basar except for wait. You would think, so you would think. And that's, it is one possible explanation, perhaps. But we'll see there are other explanations. And the answer given by Rabbi Yohanan is, Amar le, velo chlum, you don't have to wait at all. Which is even stranger. In other words, Rabbi Asi comes to Rabbi Yohanan and says, well, I know you have to wait, how long do you have to wait? And Rabbi Yohanan says to him, you don't have to wait at all. So this Vadai needs some explanation. This requires some explanation. Furthermore, the Gemara continues and says, Ini, is that the case? Is it true that you don't have to wait between Basar and then Gevina? Waha amar al-hisda. Here we have another statement which says very clearly, Achal Basar, asul echol Gevina. If you ate Basar, and Basar is Basar and not Of, if you ate Basar behema, asul echol Gevina, then you're not allowed to eat cheese. Gevina, you ate cheese first, mutar lechol basar. So if we understand Rav Hizda means to say that after eating basar you must wait, then we would have a mahloket between Rav Hizda and Rabbi Yohanan. Because Rabbi Yohanan said to Rabbi Asi, lo chlum, you don't have to wait at all. And Rav Hizda says, achal basar, asol lechol gevina. So the Gemara explains on line 20 what is being discussed. Ela kama yishha ben gevina levasar, amar le velo chlum. The Gemara says you have to reverse the question of Rabbi Asi from Rabbi Yohanan. And this is what Rashi was pointing out to us. If you say basar first, then gevina, that's what you mean. And then we have a problem with that because it contradicts Rav Hisda. But if we turn it around and say the question was kama yishheb ben gevina levasar, then we have no problem. Because then he said to him, well, you don't have to wait at all. You have to wait between basar and then gevina, but not the other way around. Rashi here says, opposite line 16, asur lechol gevina. Why are you not allowed to eat gevina having eaten basar? Rashi says, Mishum de basar musi shuman, because meat, that is to say, basar behema, is fatty. It has fat, a certain fat content, or some kinds of meat do. Wuhu nivbak bapeh umarich beta'amo, and this fatty substance from the meat, Rashi says, nivbak, which I would translate as meaning coats the mouth, areas of your mouth, it coats it. Your mouth is covered in this greasy, fatty substance. Umarich b'ta'amo, and the flavor, the taste of that meat, therefore lingers in your mouth longer than other foods, and therefore the cause of the ta'am in your mouth, the fact that you can still, as it were, taste the meat in your mouth, you're not allowed to eat cheese until you clean out your mouth by either by waiting or by doing something. That depends on how we understand the sugya. But you can't do it immediately without doing anything because there's this problem of the tam of the basar which is in your mouth. So Rashi didn't mention at this point, Rashi hasn't mentioned the problem of basar ben hashinaim, that is to say, meat caught between your teeth. Here Rashi mentions something else which is not explicitly mentioned in the Gemara, which is the tam of the basar, which is ma'arich, which lingers. That's element number 4 of the sugya. And then we have on line 21, we have a clarification, an amplification of what was said before. Gufa, in other words, that which was stated before. Amar av hisda, achal basar asul echol gevina. If you ate meat, you may not eat gevina. However, if you ate gevina, mutal echol basar. It says here that Rav Amar le Rav Aha bar Yosef le Rav Hisda. Rav Hisda was asked the following question by Rav Aha bar Yosef: Basar ben Hashinaim mahu? What is the status of Basar ben Hashinaim? Rashi explains, opposite line 18: Basar ben Hashinaim mi hashiv basar? Is it considered meat? Shelo lechol gevina imo ad sheyitalenu? Note well what Rashi says. Rashi says, is meat stuck between your teeth, which is obviously not a very large amount of meat, therefore a very small strand piece of meat that can be stuck between one's teeth, not very much. That is that amount of meat stuck between your teeth, and basar of course means basar behema, mi hashiv basar, is that considered basar? Do we take note of that amount that is stuck in your mouth? Shelo lechol gevina imo al sheyitalenu, that you will not be allowed to eat cheese whilst that is in your mouth until you remove it. Is this an issue or is this not an issue? This is an interesting question, by the way, because if you think about it, because if we understand the original statement of Rav Hisda to mean achal basar asul lechol gevina, to mean that you must wait, then if that's what it means, I'm not saying that's what it does mean, but if that's what it means, that Rav Hisda said if you ate basar you must wait a certain period of time before eating gevina, then the question of Rav Aha bar Yosef to Rav Hisda, basar ben hashinaim mahu, must be understood to mean, even if I have waited that period of time, but there's still basar ben hashinaim, is that a problem? Do you understand? Because the other possibility would be to say as follows: if you wait a certain amount of time, whatever amount of time that may be, then, even if there's still basar ben hashinaim, after that period of time has elapsed, it's no longer considered basar, because it's just considered to be material, junk. It's not considered meat at this point. It's neutral, which is apparently what the Rambam holds. Correct, as we'll see. But if we understand Rav Hisda's statement to mean achal basar asul lechol gevina, therefore you must wait, as was implied by the question of Rabbi Asi to Rabbi Yohanan, kama yishheh, how long must you wait? If that's the meaning, then the only way to understand this question of basar ben hashinaim is to say that it means, even if I did wait, is basar ben hashinaim a problem, or has the waiting solved that problem? And he says to him, what's the answer? Amar kari ale, ale. In other words, he quoted the pasuk to him, and he said the answer is in the pasuk. Habasar odenu ben shinehem, talking about the Jewish people eating the salau, the quail in the midbar, in the desert, and it says that the meat was still between their teeth. In other words, the Torah refers to meat stuck between the teeth as meat. So he says, you see, basar ben ashinaim is considered basar. I just read Rashi, and we'll stop here for today. Basar sheben ashinaim, Rashi says, mi hashiv basar shelo lechol gevina imo ad shitle. Now, is it still considered meat, and therefore it's asur to eat gevina whilst this is in your mouth? And he quoted the pasuk to me. He says, basar odenu ben shinehem. In other words, Rashi says, alma mikri basar. Therefore, you see, it's still called basar. So yes, it's a problem. This is the fifth element of the sugya, this question of basar ben ashinaim.